This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Ramya. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI's on-air community, and everyone's invited.
There's times I think there's comments I could make that may not fall these days and be sensitive, and I don't think it's an insensitive remark what I'm thinking in my head right now, but I'll test it out. Welcome to the program. Kelly McDonald here at the Home Studio of London, Ontario. Out there in Toronto on main campus, Ramya Amadhin, welcome back. Nice to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. And was that the potential offensive part or the risque or what's going on?
So have you ever heard or played around with, saw vinyl?
I don't know what played around is. I've never owned it, but I have, I guess, checked it out. At W. Ross, they had some real old stuff. Was that offensive? Anyway, at one of the buildings, and that was the first time for me to even check out a record player in my life, and then the vinyl.
Had you ever seen a record before that?
No.
No, okay.
No, so, I had not.
Yeah, so that's
we
the part where I'm
trying. Cassette tapes, that's all.
That's the part where I try to be a little appropriate and not suggest for a moment. We were having this discussion on the show about videotapes and locations where you could have rented them. And
VHS?
Some of the places we mentioned, yeah.
We
and I just didn't
VHS,
want to offend
yeah.
Brock or anyone yesterday saying, aren't you too young for that? So I wanted to be a little careful how sure. I worded, aren't you too young for that to know about that? Or are you? Or my goodness, because of course you start forgetting, okay, when did that kind of go out of vogue? But when we were, before the show, we were talking with Parker about vinyl for a moment. And I wasn't sure when I said playing around with vinyl, collecting, playing, whatever. We had John Melville on here. He loves it. He collects it and stuff like that. John has all sorts of things like that. So I kind of wondered on your experience or your family's experience, if your mom or dad still had any laying around.
I'm not sure about vinyl and even like their own experience with it. But, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, we were heavy into the cassette tapes. Lots of cassette tapes. I think still in our garage, we could find a box buried somewhere with a tape player and cassette tapes that we're heavily avoiding because it will come with a lot of questions on. No, because the content.
Yeah.
We're trying to avoid it because most of the content I know at this point has been re-recorded from the original to whatever me and my brother were doing at the time that we thought would be fun to record. So,
this says, the Temptations, and then you put it in and it's Temptations. All right.
Yeah.
Bro and Rum sitting there making up noise or singing.
We really thought we were fun. Yeah.
We were better than the Temptations. That's why we erased them. Put paper towel or something in the holes of the tape so you could rub it out because they punched the tabs, assuming no, this is a store-bought tape. No one would ever want to rub this out.
Wow.
That was the techniques, right? You learn how to, I don't like this. I can use this tape for something. Anyway, I digress, but that is why I'm careful and had to be yesterday when we were talking Blockbuster Video on the program and just saying, you remember that? Coming up on today's show, folks, as we swing open the gateway to your weekend, AI wearable powered tech, of course, AI powered wearable tech is dominating right now out there. Of course, it's all over the headlines with revolutionary promises, but some reviewers are not impressed. On the app update, John Beeler, he'll be telling us about the devices lining up to replace your smartphone.
Also, Brock Richardson, our sports reporter, has the details on the CBC's coverage of the upcoming Paralympic and Olympic Games in Paris. We're looking forward to that.
And on the chatty bookshelf today, Ryan Huey shares his review of The Will of the Many, the latest young adult conspiracy. And this is from author James Islington. We'll get into that conversation with him later on in hour two. A violinist tried to serenade a trapped killer whale calf in British Columbia in hopes of freeing it. Why others are raiding nets and boats.
Canadian military veteran Carol Love says she did see the orca calf rise to the surface in the distance after playing her violin on a bridge at high tide. Love says a lot of her violin notes sound like orca and hopes it will spur the calf to swim through a narrow channel and into the open ocean to freedom. Meanwhile, a rescue team continues to prepare to catch the killer whale calf in a net and transport it to the nearby ocean, but they have not yet confirmed the timing of the next rescue attempt. The calf has been in a Vancouver Island lagoon since its pregnant mother became stranded on a rocky beach at low tide and died. Naira Ahmed, The Canadian Press.
What an interesting way to help out or to make that attempt. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It feels very unique. Like, I'm not sure if I've ever heard anyone do something similarly or intentionally this way, but it doesn't just sound like a sweet thing that she's trying to do. She said that it's, you know, there's some logic to the actual notes and the sound being potentially helpful, kind of like a call, right?
Yeah. Like the Pied Piper story, but in this aspect, based in science and what we know about animal biology, I'm wondering, and again, you could go online, I guess, and find out all about the kind of notes that it would take to do that.
Yeah.
So really interesting, really creative way. And you just hope that, hey, the whale gets out there, roams around, says, hey, what's over here?
I know.
And just happens
Any
to find that opening.
To,
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, because this stuff is pretty serious. You just don't want to see it, and it's so sad how they suddenly, on a moment, maybe during a storm or something, get lost. And hey, how'd I end up in here?
Yeah,
but I'm just a little kid
hoping
playing
for a happy ending.
You betcha. Coming up next on the program, as we step aside for 2 minutes, did your indoor planters bring some unwanted guests along for the ride? Uh-oh, I have a feeling we've touched on this before. Gardener Susan Kearney tells us how to get rid of bugs with. You wait for it. More bugs? Well, of course. Tit for tat. We'll be right back.
Don't miss a minute. Kelly and Ramya will be right back.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter or X, whatever you prefer. I mean, there's that bunch of people out there that will never call it X. It's just they've said it. They declare it. It's always going to be Twitter. She is at All Rams with a Z on the end. All Rams at All Rams on Twitter. I'm at AMI Kelly Mack. Hey, maybe drop us a message. Say hi sometime. Appreciate the new followers, folks. Ramya Muth and Kelly McDonald, we are the hosts of Kelly and Ramya. We are here weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV. 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Once a month on Fridays to get things going, we get gardening with our gardener, Susan Kearney.
Hello, I'm Susan Kearney. Join me on Kelly and Ramya for the joy of gardening by using touch, taste, scent, and sound.
Well, Susan, we got a lot of business to take care of. I'm expecting a disgruntled Susan later on, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that shortly from the gossip I've heard here. I'm kind of curious, though, to start with, what's our feature plant for the week?
It is the blue flag iris, and mine have come up beautifully, and they will bloom in June. The leaves right now are reaching up to the sky, getting lots of nice rain, and they will grow much taller, and in June they will have their beautiful purple blooms.
How tall? Like what do you think on average?
They can grow about approximately 3 feet tall. Right now they're about a foot and a half because they've been dormant all winter, so their leaves sort of fall to the ground, and then once they start to straighten up and get to that warm sunshine and the rain. Then they start to grow.
Nice. Very, very nice. And why did you pick this particular one today?
Well, because it was one of my first things that came up in the garden. It's nice because it is a native plant, so it doesn't mind the cold. It's out there and it's very happy.
Amazing. Well, that's the good news. Now there's some not so good news that's going on with you, Susan. I think something has come into your home that you weren't necessarily ready for and are definitely not enjoying the company of. So what's going on?
Well, we have hydroponic gardens, little hydroponic units, and we grow tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and herbs. We can do this all year round. And they are little units that have light spectrums on them, and you fill them with water and food. There's no soil involved. And our tomato plants, one morning I realized that they were all sticky. And I could actually, if you break the leaves or the stems of tomatoes, they have a very pungent smell to them. And I could smell the leaves, and I thought, this is very peculiar. Yeah. I don't understand what is going on.
Because you're smelling them without it being broken.
Yes, yes. And the reason for that is because we had an infestation of what you call white flies. It actually is very common among peppers and tomatoes, and but we've never had it before in our indoor gardens, in our indoor hydroponic garden. We had to get rid of all the tomatoes, and we just dumped the whole thing out and get rid of them. We've got lots more to plant, so I'm not worried about it. I'm leaving the unit for about 2 weeks. I scrubbed it down with vinegar and water. I will leave it for about 2 weeks to sit, and so I don't think there's anything left. I cleaned up everything. It was a mess because you had to get rid of them. And then I had to take care of the other plants in the house because they can be spread to other plants. So anything that was in the actual rooms or around these hydroponic gardens, I actually had to take there's strips of sticky paper that you put on sticks, and you put that in the soil because these ones are in the soil. They're the smooth leaf plants. And then other plants that were in other rooms, I just closed all the doors. Every door in the house is now closed so that we can keep these under control.
Wow. I'm curious before you carry on, Suze, because I'm just curious. When you say you cleaned that hydroponic containment
unit, yes.
You took everything out of the unit and did the treatment. Anything you have to do with the soil or anything? Like, I gather you don't really care because it's going outside and those flies are already outside or whatever. But would you, by getting rid of it, does that put in danger anything outside near your garden, or what do you do to dispose of that?
Just in the bags, or what? Into a plastic bag, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Everything went into a plastic bag, went out to the garbage. It couldn't go into the garden.
No.
And there is no soil in the hydroponic. And even the water, we poured the water out. Once we'd poured the water out onto the rocks, on some rocks, then we actually took some vinegar and poured that over top just to make sure that they don't breed anywhere else. These are always in the environment. And and when a plant is just like people, when a plant is either very, very young or very old or not particularly healthy, and maybe I'd left those tomatoes plants a little too long. I usually switch them over after about 6 months. I do switch them over. I might have left them a little longer because I thought, oh, there's more blooms. I'm going to get more tomatoes. But perhaps it wasn't a wise thing to do. Anyway, I'm hoping that it's taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really wild, especially all that work, especially closing up the rooms and that. Has anyone in the family seen any of them elsewhere, like in the air or anything like that? Or do you really only notice them on the plants?
Well, they were pretty well on the plant. What is very interesting is that my grandchildren were over when And I was cleaning everything up, and I said something about salad, and they said, "Oh, we're not eating tomatoes in the salad." But I hadn't put any of the tomatoes in the salad. I had thrown everything out, but it makes them. They make a lot of noise about it and everything, and ugh, and that's yucky, and all that sort, all those sort of words. But yeah,
I say that with perfectly good tomatoes. Shouldn't say. I used to do that to my mom. Oh, tomatoes. But what a project and what a concern. And now if there are any around, the sticks will get them, hopefully.
Yes, lots okay. of these. It's like sticky paper on both sides, and you just put them on the sticks. And I've put them in a lot of my different plants. And then I think in about 2 or 3 days, I'll start pulling them out and asking anybody who can look at them, is there anything, are there any of these flies on it? Because they'll just, and the paper is yellow, which is really interesting, because they're attracted to the color yellow, which is very interesting. I found that really interesting. So yes, the paper is yellow, the sticky paper is yellow. So they're attracted to that.
Wow, talk about deadly attraction for them. Wow. What else to control that, or should we move on to another unique way of disposing of insects that will dispose of insects?
Yes, absolutely. If this happens to your pepper or tomato plants outdoors, one thing that is very good for it is to attract ladybugs or dragonflies to your garden, and because they eat these little creatures. They eat these little white flies that get into the tomatoes and peppers, and it's very common in outdoor gardens. They'll get in there, but our lovely dragonflies and the ladybugs, they eat them. So they keep those under control, which is very good. That's nature's way of saying, okay, fine. That's their dinner, and they'll take care of those. So it's very good to attract those particular good insects to your garden. There's also a tiny little wasp that I apologize, I can't remember the name of, and they also eat those little white flies and also the larva of the white fly. So they even get to the white flies don't actually get to maturity if you can attract these little tiny wee wasps that fly around and eat the larva. So they're another good bug to attract to your garden.
Mm, that's really interesting. I've heard of the wasp. Mm-hmm. I can't remember either the name on one of the nature shows or something, but it's really interesting when you think of handling the problems. I mean, obviously, you're not going to invite wasps and stuff into your house and say, hey, go crazy getting those. You know,
no, I don't want any of those bugs in the house. So, no. But the outdoor, you can do that. You can control them with these particular bugs outdoor.
So, really, what kind of techniques you used for this situation is the best way to do it, and being careful for a time period of, hey, I've gotten rid of those. So you wouldn't obviously go right in now and start replanting and putting tomatoes in the house like now with the hydroponic, even if you had another one ready to go, because they're still in the house and would be attracted.
They could be. They absolutely could be. So I'm going to wait 2 weeks, and then I will replant everything, and just keep a watch on whether or not they show up in any other plant. I hope not. I hope we got it in time. Yeah.
Wow. How often does this kind of thing happen to you, whether it's outdoors or indoors?
I've never had it happen in the 4 years we've had the hydroponic gardens. So touch wood, I guess I've been lucky. How it happened, I have no idea. I have had it happen in my outdoor garden with my tomatoes. I have had that happen. So it's that was quite a while ago. And I think these things go in cycles. That's what I think. I think that they go in, the insects go in cycles, and I also think that maybe that plant was not particularly healthy. And that's right. when you can run into trouble, when your plants aren't particularly healthy. It's just like us people or animals, the same thing. So, I'm hoping I got them all.
Wow. I hope it's not like that. If I start feeling unhealthy, I don't want flies hanging around. But Sue, like you say, it's kind of reciprocal in that sense. But on the outside garden, or if somebody's starting a garden indoor or out, is there anything particular you would tell a person? Like, would you ever tell a person, look, these are the kind of things that are probably going to happen sometime or not. If you're lucky and have a horseshoe, maybe not. But do look for this kind of thing, whether it's this kind of fly or some other insect.
Yes, absolutely, because our plants do attract insects, good ones and bad ones, and there's always going to be an insect that is particularly bad, because every plant has an insect that might actually live on that plant. So it just depends. I do know that the white flies are very common to tomatoes and peppers. They might get on other plants too, but it's just the way Mother Nature has, if something isn't healthy, then the bugs can eat all the, get rid of those plants, and they do. It was all sticky. Everything was sticky and gooey because all the they were munching on the leaves, and all the sap was coming out. So trying to clean it, was really...
Imagine that smorgasbord in that garbage bag as it went to the curb. You know, there must have been a party in that bag. You must have walked by and all you could hear is, meow.
Yes.
Thanks. Thanks, Suze. This is great.
Bye.
Good luck with stuff. Oh, my goodness. Let's hope that's the last of those guys. Folks, we visit with Susan Kearney, our gardener. We do this at the top of our Friday show to get things started. To coming up next on the program, AI-powered wearable tech is dominating headlines with revolutionary promises. Oh, keeping those promises, are we? Well, some reviewers are not impressed. On the app update, John Beeler will tell us about the devices lining up to replace your smartphone. Yes, yours. We'll talk about it after this.
Stick around and learn something new. Kelly and Rumya return with more in a moment.
Better not have any flies on your cell phone, Rum. Don't want that. Don't want to pick it up. And the way Susan described the stickiness, ew.
Not so far.
I expected
I don't know
Susan
what's worse, mosquitoes
mad,
or flies.
Know?
Like, flies actually drive me, up the wall.
Yeah. Mosquitoes, obviously, they're a nuisance. They're painful. Some people, they're really attracted to.
Specifically, ruin a vacation or time outdoors. But flies.
Yeah, and that high-pitched noise drives you crazy. But flies and that just being there, and then you start thinking where flies hang out. Yeah, I was in a garbage bag earlier today. Oh, yeah, it was a field full of cows over there, and I was walking along in that. There's a lot of stuff on the ground over there. Like, oh, my gosh, you start thinking too much. You're walking across my counter. Where have those feet been, fly?
Gross. I think carry so much.
With Rumya Muthan.
Let's get into our Friday app update and switch gears a little to talk tech with John Beeler.
Hi, I'm John Beeler, technology expert from Vancouver. Join me on Kelly and Rumya, where I share the latest app, mobile, and tech news. Everything from accessibility and product launches to privacy and security. We'll cover the gamut.
John, we're starting off with some public reviews, if you will. The Humane AI Pin is being called the worst product I ever reviewed, and this seems to be kind of a general perspective for people who've tried it out. So tell us what the product is and tell us why it's being hated on so much.
Well, we talked about this a little while ago when it was first announced, and it had a lot of hype behind it because it was 6 years in development. They've had hundreds of millions of dollars in funding, and it's sort of run by a bunch of Apple former employees. So there's a lot of interesting sort of pieces to this puzzle. And when they first showed the first demos of it, it was very exciting. It's a very small little pin. It almost looks like a Star Trek communicator. You just have it on your body. You can talk to it, and you can also project with a built-in projector into your hand, the answers to the questions that you might ask AI, mm-hmm. Whether that be navigation, whether it's to read a message, whether it's to find a best place to go for dinner, those types of things. And the embargoes just lifted this week on the reviews of the people that have had it for a little while. And like you said off the top, universally, nobody seems to like this thing. There's no denying that there's some interesting tech here and that there's some very cool stuff packed into this little tiny package. But there's a number of reasons why people haven't been having a good time with it. And the biggest problem is that it's slow and clunky. You basically have to do everything via the cloud. You pay a subscription fee for internet service. And currently in the US, it only works on T-Mobile. So your options are kind of limited depending on where you live and how you're going to use it and that type of thing. And what a lot of people have seen when they're using it is they'll ask it a question and it can take 30 to 90 seconds to get an answer,
which is not
practical. Yeah. So I will say though, the time alone is a pretty big, automatic fail for a lot of people. But what it was doing, it was kind of cool. If you're standing in front of a pizza place or a restaurant, and you can just basically ask it, does this place have good reviews? And it will take a picture of that place. It'll figure out where it is on the internet, look up their menu and see what the customer sentiment is, which is really cool. It just takes way too long for the average person to sort of sit there and wait for this response. The other thing that people have said is while the tech is really cool, it gets really hot and not in a good way because there's lots going on in this little package.
Yes.
So there's that. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting and it seems like a big issue, especially with AI and privacy and things like that, is that you actually have to tap it to activate it. So it's not listening all the time. It only activates when you touch it. But there's no authentication on that touching. So if you lose this thing, anybody will have access to your stuff. A simple solution that some reviewers have said is just instead of making it a tap thing, just make it a fingerprint ID thing. And so you just tap it. And
there's literally no security.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's problematic.
Just
okay.
A little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think everyone had some pretty big hopes for this thing, but, at almost $1,000 Canadian, it's like 700 US and a $24 US a month subscription fee.
What's that for?
That's basically for the cellular plan.
Yeah. No.
Because it doesn't pair with your phone. It's completely separate from your phone.
Oh, this is not sounding
great. Remember you saying that. Well, again, some of these things, John, what would you think of what's fixable? Obviously, like you said, take away the tap and give us some security, like a fingerprint. The heating up thing, that's really bad too, because it's a wearable and you're going to like, what's burning me under my coat?
That
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the length of time, no, man. By that time, people look out the window. Oh, I know what you're doing. Throw food at you. Get out of here. We've got good reviews. Beat it. What do you think would be the easiest? Like, do you see hope for, or these reviews just take it right down that where people would just give up? Like you said, that minute 30, that's long.
Well, what a lot of people have been saying in the reviews is it'd be very interesting if they could find a way to put these large language model AI systems on the device itself, which is what we're seeing more and more with smartphones. They're having dedicated chips just for this purpose and dedicated memory to store these language models so that you can do a lot of that processing in real time. Obviously, looking up restaurant internet reviews is going to be something that you're not going to have on your device, or at least you're not going to have the entire internet on your device. But there's things that they can do to optimize that. And I think the takeaway here is that perhaps this is just still too much of an alpha product, and they should have sort of kept it behind closed doors a little bit longer until they got that feedback from external parties, like they're getting in droves now from all the reviewers, and then actually go in and tweak a few things and then make it even a beta then. Coming out of the gate with a pretty poor solution is going to basically turn this device into a dead-end arrival device.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because, like you said, it sounds pretty promising on certain priorities and even concepts, right, conceptually, but it feels definitely still like a prototype. So to get kind of terrible reviews from everybody who has it is not very encouraging. Have they
commented? All these friends of Apple as reviewers. Yeah. These Apple people connected to Apple. We'll give a review.
Apple's got history with this kind of thing anyway. But the stakes are high, right? Nowadays, the stakes are high, especially when you're talking about just like timing of feedback and things like that. You're like, come on, 90 seconds? Who waits 90 seconds for anything anymore? Also, have they commented specifically on anything since the feedback has poured in?
Well, in typical PR spin and speak, they have basically said that this is it's on a road of development and it will improve over time. But a lot of these reviewers are like, well, I can't make a review based on what might come. I have to base it on what I'm actually dealing with right now.
Yeah.
And the current state is not usable and not recommended for just about anybody, unless you're a super nerdy person that wants to play with new tech. But even then, I mean, I still want to play with this because I still think there's some interesting aspects about it. And I just wish that there was a better way to deal with the lag and the sort of the time to actually get stuff done.
That $25 a month fee. Dealing
and
with
the $1,000 to buy it. And in the States, you can't just have it on one network. Yeah. That's just going to kill it.
Yeah, exactly. There has to be some changes to that whole system.
Yeah. And you can only say prototype just for so long, folks. No, you're beyond that. You know, and how is it going to adapt along the way? You want us to buy these, but you're going to make sure we can come in a year and switch it off, right, as you're adapting it. No. Your second item, sir. Limitless is a new AI tool for your meetings and an all-hearing wearable gadget. Interesting.
Yes. To flip the script a little bit, I thought I would include this. This is a very interesting little device that actually works with your computer, not your smartphone. And the idea behind it is that you pay $99 US for this particular device. It looks like a little clip-on thing. It almost looks like a Fitbit, that type of thing. And essentially, it is a microphone. And what it does is, in conjunction with the app, when you're in a meeting, it's recording everything, and it basically creates the ability for you to search the history of your meeting. So unlike just using Zoom and the baked-in AI tools that come with those types of video conferencing, this is meant for, like, you're in a physical meeting with physical people, and you need to record something. And so they spend a lot of time making the microphone in this very specific for this type of situation. And, you know, it's a pretty inexpensive price point. So what you can do then is you can actually talk to the software that's on your computer, and it'll have the ability to, so you can go things like, you know, what did Kelly mention? What was that app that he mentioned, you know, in that meeting at the beginning of the meeting? Hmm. It'll actually be able to go back and surface that information to the top of your software, and then you'll have those records. And, you know, whatever it is, you can sort of talk to it, and it will use AI to sort of package those summaries and the results of that information that you're looking for very succinctly. And they have some pretty lofty goals with this particular tool, because it's also meant to work with any app that you're using while you're in a meeting. So say you bring up a spreadsheet or a PDF or something like that, it'll sort of hoover up all that stuff, which, again, as we've talked lots of times, is a concern, because you're putting it all into this company's cloud system basically letting their AI hoover it all and basically create a language model based on your meeting experiences, your software, your presentations, your deliverables, all that kind of stuff, and then let you talk to the AI to sort of surface information out of that.
But I mean, yeah, and all of that is, of course, definitely concerning. But when we narrow in on this kind of use case for AI, doesn't it seem very, you know, it's an efficiency tool. It's something where you can really utilize it for a lot of different contexts and types of work. I think it's very useful. Now, did you mention anything, John, about something similar for email? You know, be able to kind of search inboxes and such. Is there any tool out there that uses AI help to surface different questions or topics or whatever to the top of an inbox?
Well, Google's baking that into Gmail.
Okay,
so you have that option.
Yeah.
Just one more thing on the limitless pendant, as they're calling it. It does have an interesting feature, because imagine we sat down in a meeting and I'm wearing this pendant and we've never met. And you might say, well, what is that pendant doing? Are you recording me?
Right.
Limitless has functionality built in. It's called consent mode. And basically what it does is it won't actually record our conversation. It'll just record me, but it won't record you until you actually consent on the microphone to be recorded, which wow. I think is a really interesting thing that we
ideally, yeah. But how do we know that's the way it works? Because if it's taking you, how is it not taking that? Or is it just that it's not keeping the data that it's taking from the other person?
Yeah, because it's basically
it's
using,
still hearing.
It's using an array of microphones to sort of capture the room,
uh-huh.
and it will remove background noise. It'll remove people that haven't consented. It's basically a filter, if you will, for the audio.
All right.
I wonder if it could do multiple people. But anyway, we'll save that for another day.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get to Google One really quickly. The Google One VPN service is headed to the Google graveyard. Why?
Yeah, this is sad because I think we spent a whole segment on this a few months ago, mm-hmm. when they basically widened it and made it available to anybody. Because originally it was only for Google One subscribers, and you had to have like a Pixel phone or there's some other string attached to it. And it's a very simple to implement, like literally one switch to turn on the VPN. And it is probably one of the faster VPNs out there. And like a lot of things in Google land, Google's retiring it because they said no one's using it. And it makes it really difficult to want to recommend any Google product because you know
we're
it's
gonna
got
say.
A short shelf life.
Yep. Yeah, this is honestly, it feels so typical no matter how good the product was, no matter how well liked. And they can say, yeah, but there wasn't enough uptake. But we just think pattern for Google. Unfortunate, but thanks for sharing it, John. And we'll chat with you next week.
Sounds great.
John Beeler joins us for our app updates, and that's every Friday where we talk a couple things tech.
We're out of here for a couple of minutes, ladies and gentlemen. When we return, the France Tourism Alliance has created a video game to help Paralympic volunteers create an iconic experience for athletes and visitors. Nazreen Abdel-Majid had that story for us on The Buzz after this.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
Thanks for being with us, ladies and gentlemen. We're opening the gateway to your weekend, checking out our Friday edition. Thank you kindly. We're here from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI TV, on AMI Audio. We kick off the show at 4 p.m. Eastern and repeats of the show at 10 p.m. Eastern on both networks. It's Kelly and Ramya. Ramya's at the studio in Toronto. Kelly McDonald here at the studio in London, Ontario, and wherever you are listening in around the world. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it. Wednesday through Friday on the program, we call this segment The Buzz, and we get a chance to talk about different things, a variety of topics that come from around the world. AMI technical producer Nazreen Abdel-Majid is joining us to fill in here on The Buzz, and a variety of subjects today, Nazreen. We don't know where you're going to go today, so where do you wish to start?
I'm going to start with Paris. Paris 2024 Olympic Games, a major French company creates a video game to spread the hospitality culture among all welcomers. So Alliance France Tourism, an association of major tourism companies, will offer free training in the form of an immersive video game ahead of the Paris Olympics this summer to enhance hospitality across France. The 30-minute game will have two themes, French hospitality and the 2024 Olympic Games. The users will learn the basics of French hospitality, so availability, manners, openness to others, and further skills. So that's pretty cool. I mean, France is a very popular tourist destination, as we all know, and they are showing that all of their employees are ready for you this summer. And they're going to provide the best hospitality for visitors. And it's also a very engaging way to provide training for the employees and volunteers who are doing this. So to make it into a video game, I think it's very creative and very engaging.
Do we feel like this, you know, directly correlates to the kind of, I guess, engagement that we want from the Paralympics? I mean, I don't even know if it really matters, because any engagement, Olympics, Paralympics, whatever, sports, any engagement is something, right? And we know how big these games are. So I'm just curious about what would lead to this being the approach?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I feel like they're
trying tourism
to kind of...
Yeah, that's fair.
That's the big reason you do these things. These cities all talk in what's the benefit, especially afterward, whether it's visitors. It's the same as when people first condemn having them because they say, well, how much money are you using for this when you could be helping the needy and people who really need? So what does this do for you? So the whole idea is the attraction of all this money coming to your place, spending it, and what better way but saying, hey, well, look what we're doing for the tourists. Here's all about our food. Here's about the mannerisms. Here's how you feel comfortable here, how beautiful and wonderful it
culture.
Is, and safe
right.
culture. Yep. This is what we have. You know nothing about us. Let us tell you. Let us tell you how great. And I think that's the pitch. But most people, well, I'm not going to sit there and read your stupid little brochures. Well, here, play a video game.
Yeah, that's very fair. It's like more of a three-dimensional or engaging experience, number one, and like you said, there's not a shortage of people wanting to try anything French anyway, right? No. Like cuisine and such.
Yeah, and as you go to a place, you want to live or do what the natives do there, the people who live there. You kind of want that feel and not to feel like such a outsider tramping in there and say, well, we're here now. Yeah. Roll out the red carpet. You know, live like they do. But I think there's such pressure for cities, countries, when they bring the Olympics in, because you know they're spending a whole bunch of dough, that certainly there's better places the money could go to within your own population. So you better darn well, here's how we're paying it forward. Here's how this is a benefit, us hosting. Yeah, there better be.
Yeah.
Exactly. Very well said. So I'm going to move to article number two here. Ever heard of poo-powered planes? Yes, you heard me. Human waste could soon power planes. Hungarian airline Wizz Air has made a deal with a British company to work on jet fuel made from human waste. Firefly Green Fuels is a biofuel company that has developed a process to convert sewer waste into sustainable aviation fuel. Their fuel production uses around 70% less carbon than conventional jet fuel. They are hoping to begin supplying Wizz Air by 2028. Firefly believes their sustainable production can be done around the globe with their human waste. Paul Hiddich, the Firefly's chief operating officer, says, quote, anywhere in the world where there are people, there's poo. End quote. So what do you guys think of poo powered planes?
I'm thinking 70% less waste to use waste.
He's talking a bunch of crap. But I get a kick out of the name of the airline, Wizz Airlines. No, we're not using that.
There's a little bit of confusion here on the naming conventions.
Well,
I did not even think of Wizz Air.
Yeah, but you've heard this, Niz. Like, it's sort of like you've heard when they make up stuff to burn. Like, we talk about grease, right? And
how that
can power a vehicle. There are so many things. It seems like a lot of waste. See, well, I guess that's the best thing to do. And I love it. If there was a way to utilize stuff like that and cut down on the carbon footprint in some capacity.
But we should be doing it in every way. Like, really.
And
like,
I think we have attitudes about it, right?
Yeah, but like, you know, who cares about our attitudes? Honestly,
that's what I say.
There's never a shortage of not just human waste, but all kinds of waste, right? Like food waste and this and that, animal waste, and scraps,
everything.
Exactly. So, there was this really cool thing I saw on Shark Tank where she, was able to compile grease and make it into like a solid thing. Anyways, it's something to throw out. But at the end of the day, it's something to do with what we're throwing out anyways and potentially repurposing it, right? And forget our attitudes. It's just the availability and the needs for us to be able to do better for climate change.
And it's the time, because of the climate change concerns, it is the time for us to start saying, hey, folks, for
like
one,
we're eating
this stuff
crickets.
In the environment. Well, and we're warming up the environment with poo and so on, right? So these are things that are not good for the environment. So if you find a way to dispose of them and move the world, in Wizz Airlines' case, forward.
Right.
Maybe, instead of flying a plane backwards, and you enjoy your cricket meal, lunch. and fly.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why is it that certain things we're willing to, you know, try, like different sources of protein, that at some point in time, majority of the world is like, nah, I would never eat bugs. And, you know, we're at a point now where we're like using human waste. Ugh, but I don't think so.
I don't think I'd eat those bugs that were hanging out with Sue's tomatoes, but no. Not those guys.
But maybe down the line.
Interesting fact about London is we have the biggest cricket. I don't want to say factory because that's wrong. Obviously, we don't build them. But what's the word I'm looking for? The producing plant, facility. Thank you. Cricket. There's a, you know, I'm trying to think of the word. But anyway, they convert it to food, them to food for animals and parts of the world where humans eat them.
There you go.
I'm all about, you know, what's good for the environment. I'm all about that. But eating crickets, that's a no-go for me. I'm not one of those people that are willing to try these things. But
grasshoppers?
Yeah. Nope. No.
I got her at the yeah. No.
No. No.
But you would be okay with human waste using being used to fuel airplanes. Right.
Listen, I was back and forth about this. I'm like, you know what? This is good for the environment. But I'm thinking about myself, like, you know, sitting in a plane and they're like, yeah, this is powered by human waste.
But how would we know,
are
though?
You ready to
fly? Are we
going to
smell it? Is it going to be any less clean? Like, those are the things that actually matter, right? On a basic level. Yeah. Like, if it's sanitary.
But, like, what if you know that the plane that you're on,
All I want to know is it keeps me in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Like,
and
I don't know.
Soon we'll be using it for gas in cars. Replacing gas in cars. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it'll be the poop pumps.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like it.
Cool. And last story of the day. Two-story house floats through San Francisco Bay just over a week ago. A two-story home was seen floating in the San Francisco Bay for several days.
Oh, yes.
Many people were referring to it as the floating version of the house from Up, the Pixar film. And the U.S. Coast Guard said it was the private transfer of a house, which was built on top of a floating barge. The house is a floating home that was moving from one marina to another. And the house was the second to last houseboat to leave the Redwood City Marina. And due to water currents, it did take longer than expected. And I believe it took a little over 2 days to go across. So I saw a picture of it and it just reminded me of the Pixar film Up, just on water, not in the air.
There was 100 houses they moved.
Yep.
That way, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's like incredible. Can you think? And of course, the weather kept them from being able to get them as expediently across, but can you just imagine that every day you wake up, you know, like, especially if you're someone who's half asleep, I'm seeing things. I see a house on the water.
I don't know why, but I would really wonder about the stress levels of moving something like this in that fashion on the water.
Versus like on trucks?
Yeah, on land. And, you know, just efficiently because you know it's going from A to B. Like this, there's so much left to chance, no? Like, we just hear, okay, yeah, it was successful, but a little late because of the weather. But where else could have that gone?
But it's more, for one, water's great because of the buoyancy and moving it. I mean, yes, you could get a storm, but they're not going to do
it. How about even just getting it into the water or onto the water?
Yeah, but ships weigh a lot more than a house does.
I guess that's fair. But it's more about, like, moving the house onto the platform into the water. Mm. I don't know. I'm being very ignorant.
I agree with you, Rams. Yeah, I think about more of the problems of putting it on a truck and moving it, holding up traffic, the electrical, like the phone lines or whatever is
up and
not
falling. It feels a little safer because it's still on land, though.
Yeah, but it holds everyone up out in the water. And even the fish are just going to go under it. What the heck is that? House on the water. Let's go under it.
True, yeah.
The seagulls might have fun
with it. Probably seen yachts bigger than this house, huh?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, my good heavens.
But think of it this way. Like, it didn't just take a day to go across. It took a little over 2 days. So I get how stressful it can be. I don't know how they did it. And, yes, it was over, like, it was about 100 homes being moved. So I think just a little over 2 days to go across is just crazy to me. It's mind-boggling.
Did you just want to say the word? Is that what?
Yeah, I was waiting.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught her on that. Imagine if there was more than, like, if it was a whole neighborhood you were moving at once and houses were bumping together or something because of
Like in a chain?
I think that, No, I don't think so. I don't think something like this generally happens where you're saying, well, we've got to move. It's too close to the water. We're going to move all these houses and make a new neighborhood with these same houses over there. The tenants committee has voted.
And yet it's so normal, right? In a lot of different cities, this is the norm over demolishing and over just,
Or moving them by vehicle. I think San Francisco's lucky because they have this way, the Bay, as
that's
that option.
Yep.
To move and make a whole new neighborhood that way. Like, imagine, and it'll become more popular as they build those houses quickly, you know, the ones they're building in factories and stuff like that and deploying them to places. It'll become so regular to look out, no, they're moving a bunch of houses today. Oh,
as long as it's still being quality checked and, you know, considered
that one sank.
Kinds of...
In years to come, we'll be diving on houses that are at the bottom of the...
Don't just say that. Oh, my.
It used to be boats. Now it's whole houses. There's a whole mansion. You know, that's the one the Adams family had. They moved it and it sank. But I wonder how big of a house they could actually do this way.
Now I'm just thinking about them custom making me the Adams family house or something. It would be
they'd have to send that over in a few parts, right? Like a mansion you'd have
maybe,
to send over.
Maybe, like IKEA. Build your own house.
Yes. Well, they're doing that in the factory, so yeah, I guess so.
Self-assembly required.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
thank you so
like
much,
the
guys.
Lego. Thank you, Ms. Appreciate it. Nasreen Abdelmajid filling in for us, doing the buzz. We'll do another edition of the buzz next Wednesday right here on Kelly and Ramya. In the next hour of the program, however, there's still lots of content ahead. We recap and weigh in on a few highlights from the past week, including problems with Ontario's Safe Street Act, breakout moments for disabled comedians, and spotting the signs of burnout. We'll do the chatty bookshelf as well in the next hour. Ryan Huey will share his review of The Will of the Many. But up next, the CBC has unveiled coverage, lots of details for the upcoming Olympics and Paralympic Games in Paris, boasting even more coverage than ever before. Reporter Brock Richardson, he has more on Friday's Sports Update in 2 minutes.
And hear for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
Over the weekend on AMI TV, check out the best of Kelly and Ramya. Saturdays and Sundays, we are available. You can see some of the segments that we say, hey, look, these have been some great ones over the past couple of weeks. So check that out, the best of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV, Saturday and Sundays. Ramya Muthan, she's at the main campus in Toronto, and I am at the home studio here in London, Ontario. We bring him on from his home studio in Kitchener, Ontario. We're all over Ontario, man. I'm telling you. We're all over Canada. Let's get it right. Brock Richardson, the Talk Sports.
I'm Brock Richardson, and I love sports. As a former pro athlete, I bring you the sports angle beyond the headlines, plus parasport news and analysis.
A lot to talk about, ladies and gentlemen. I always say April and October, the busiest sports month at all. Brock, what's your lead off today?
I have two, and I hope this is a mind-boggling report. I'm just saying.
Well, Brock, the other thing, by the way, that
it's
we noticed.
It's a Friday. It should be.
Thing we noticed, mind-boggler, is you got a haircut, looking great. Man, you look your age.
Yes.
Whatever that is from 15. A blind guy.
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
Oh, you've heard.
You know, we would have never mentioned it if you didn't say it, right?
Yeah.
I know. But that's okay. I'm okay with being young. It's fine. And as we determined yesterday, I'm not that young because I remembered Blockbuster, right, Kelly?
Correct. Yes. Oh, yes, yeah, he right. did. And of course,
taking
some of
grievances
the
into next shows here. Oof.
I told you. Oh, it was coming, huh? That's why I brought it up earlier. I knew it was coming.
I wonder how long this grudge is going to go.
I heard the top of the show. I'm around.
He pays attention. We pay him good money.
So anyway, sports.
All right.
I can't believe I'm saying
sports,
that.
Sports, yeah. Let's start with Kyle Dubas. You may have heard, if you're scrolling around in your socials over the last hour, that he will serve as Team Canada's associate general manager at the 2024 International Ice Hockey World Championships. He will be alongside St. Louis Blues general manager Doug Armstrong, who, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, will be the GM for the team going in 2026. So he will serve as the Doug Armstrong, that is, will serve as the general manager up until the games just to make sure that he can put together the best team going in 2026. So that's some news that just broke a little about an hour ago. So there it is for you there. Something else that broke earlier this week was the fact that the CBC has unveiled its television broadcast team for the 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games held in Paris, France. I don't think there'll be much surprise here. I think most of you who watch the Olympics and Paralympic Games know the names Scott Russell and Devin Haru. Those two will be headlining the coverage. We know that Devin will be on site. It wasn't clear whether Scott will be or not, but it was made very clear by Devin himself that he will be there on site. This will be part of their 22 hours of coverage a day for the Olympics. The Olympics will only step aside for the 11 p.m. news and 6 p.m. news every day. Oh, otherwise, it's wall-to-wall coverage.
Wow.
So we're not just including the gem coverage in that. That is actual CBC network.
That is for the Olympic Games, the 22 okay. hours of coverage, just to be nice. Clear.
Yep. And then, so begs the question, what's going on with the Paralympics and CBC coverage then?
Well, we were told last summer that there would be, quote, more coverage than ever before. So what that means, and let me put this into context for you, the last Olympic Games was around, Paralympic Games, excuse me, was around 20 hours all told from beginning to end over that 10-day period. So I suspect if they're saying more coverage than ever, quote-unquote, that would then mean that it would exceed the 20 hours of coverage. CBC Gem is a lot of the places where you can get the coverage from CBC. So if you don't have that app going into the summer, you should get it, not only for the Olympics, but especially the Paralympic coverage. We are farther away still as getting this 22 hours of coverage that we get for the Olympic Games, but we are pushing in the right direction, because when I started going to the Paralympic Games in 2008, we were getting next to nothing and stuff that was replayed from like 2 weeks ago. So we've come a long way from when it started, but we are still far away from the 22 hours and only stepping aside for those two news broadcasts, as I mentioned. So
it's
good news. You look at 10 days worth of games. First day, you've got your opening ceremonies. So I won't factor that into the math in the same way. But, you know, 220 is what the number I get if you look at the 22 hours. So let's subtract that and just basically say the first day you get 4 or 6 hours of coverage. You're still looking over 200 hours. Beautiful.
Yep.
And yeah, that's just on the network versus including what's put on Gem. And I recognize there's obviously tape delay, there's repeats of stuff. Let's show you again how Brock Richardson, you know, whatever it might be, I get you're going to see a lot of that, but that's nice.
Yeah, and people, I mean, I love that, you know, when I'm watching the games, because I'm not necessarily awake when it happens. I mean, there's about a 6-7 hour time difference, something like that in Paris. So you are going to be sleeping through part of that. So I am okay with the repeats, because if you don't see what happened, it's like you're watching it new over again. It's when I sit there all of my waked hours and I go, oh wait, we're cycled back to something I already saw earlier, then I go, I've been sitting here way too long, I gotta do something else. But yeah, that's what
I
find
myself.
You're 15,
you're young enough to stay awake around the clock. The NBA playoffs are off and running. You want to give us your thoughts on that?
So I'm going to give you a couple of series here. Let's start out in the West. I'm going to pick the Denver Nuggets and LA Lakers. Now, it's not for the reasons that some of you may think. I know it's a weird pick. I recognize that. But let's start here. Denver has Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. That in itself is two good players that you know are going to do great things. And then you look on the LA side and you say, well, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, two good players there. I would say to you, that for this series, I would pick the Denver Nuggets to win. I just think they are, and well, they're a higher seed for one. Two, they're more consistent, and you never do know what you're going to get from LeBron and Anthony Davis, whether they're friends that day or that week or things are going on. It just, you just don't know, and that's sort of the other thing. There is another storyline here that's of interest. As we learned this week, Jonte Porter has gotten a lifetime ban because he violated gambling rules. Why am I telling you this in this point in the report? Well, that's because his brother, Michael Porter, plays for Denver. And this is going to be a storyline. Why? Because the media always likes to ask questions. What's going on with your brother? What's happening? What? Give us comment. Give us this. So far, he's been pretty diplomatic from everything I've seen. But I would suspect that some of the national media who don't necessarily cover this team on a regular basis will be asking during the playoffs about this. And so that's kind of the other scenario there. And I want to give you, Kelly and Ramya, both a chance to sort of comment on the storyline that I referred to there, and whether you think it's going to be a bit of a distraction.
Kels?
Never be a distraction. The media would never do that. So what do you think, Brock? Should they have given him a lifetime? No, anyway, I'm kidding. I think to an extent it will be. I love that team. I pull for them, but mainly because Jamal Murray, of course, a Kitchenerite. You know that, Brock. He lived just down the street from you. Well, okay, yeah. I'm exaggerating. But from your town, so you got to pull for the Canadian on that team. I think they're a healthier team, and the Lakers irritate me. So I guess that's kind of the point. The gambling thing, I guess, lifetime is appropriate. You hate to see it because you'd love to see somebody have a chance, but I think he's probably going to have a chance somewhere. There's another league around the world if that's what he wants to do, but there's no way you can tolerate that, Rum.
It just feels like a little bit of overkill for stories, right? Like it does feel like a bit of a distraction or just something that's going to make its way all through the headlines and be the only thing we talk about for a bit, and you know, the hums and haws of whether it was appropriate or not. But anytime something like this comes out where it's just a drastic consequence or punishment is really what's fitting here, and they say lifetime, I start to think, like, really? But is that ever appropriate? But anyway, it just kind of feels like a all or nothing scenario.
Mm-hmm.
When, yeah, things like this, I are mean, presented.
We didn't talk about this entirely when it happened. But when you're betting on your own games and, you know, like looking at wagers of what might happen, yeah, that pretty much deserves a lifetime ban. The other series in the East that I would look at is the New York Knicks versus the Philadelphia 76ers. This is of an interest series because I think the Philadelphia 76ers get kind of this bad rap where you look at them and they say, okay, they have Tyrese Maxey, who I think is very, very underrated. I think,
oh, yeah,
Joel Embiid is another one of those players that you don't know what his knee is going to do for you, but Tyrese Maxey can literally put the team on his back and say, we're going, we're going, we're going, we're doing this. Can the New York Knicks tolerate that? Sure. But I do think that's another one of those fascinating series that you should keep an eye out for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's run through one more thing. The NHL playoffs are getting going on Saturday, so tell us about the matchups you got on your radar.
I'll do this as quickly as I can. Colorado, Winnipeg, this is the type of series that you can see there's talent on both sides of the ice here. You're going to look at this and say this starts and stops with goaltending, particularly on the Winnipeg side of things. Connor Hellebuck can be this player who's you know, really, really good and sometimes really, really bad. When you don't have a goaltender who's consistent in the playoffs, you're really in trouble. So that's one series I would pick. The other one I would pick is I would tell you that Edmonton versus the LA Kings. This is the year for Edmonton to do something big. Okay, this is no longer a young team. They've been around. They've done it. They need to take advantage of what they've built. They have home ice for the vast majority of the Western Conference. There's one round if they get there. They will not have it, but it's just going to be a thing. For me, I need to see Edmonton really live up to what the hype has been for a while. Vancouver, Nashville. Vancouver is a team that nobody said would be where they are. They're among the top in the NHL. Everybody said in the media, oh, just don't embarrass yourself this year. Well, they did more than not embarrassing themselves. They finished at the top of the league here. They have a really good talent, and they are my pick in the West for the Canadian teams to do something really well. Finally, Boston-Toronto. What can I say other than here we go again? You know, I think Boston and Toronto have been this rivalry for a long time. Toronto is a team where it's like, okay, guys, you've been here. You've got Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, et cetera. The list goes on. Can you do it? Can you get over the hump? Sure you can. Boston is limping into the playoffs, but they have very, very deep team, and they know how to get it done in the playoffs. So lots of series you can keep an eye on.
Yeah, folks, do that. Brock, we'll catch you next week. He hits us with the latest sports, his update on Fridays, beginning our second hour. Up next, The Will of the Many is an adult conspiracy with a dash of political intrigue. On the chatty bookshelf, Ryan Huey shares his thoughts on the latest title from James Islington.
Don't go away. There's more great conversation with Kelly and Ramya right around the corner.
A little later in the program, we'll tell you about some of the things happening this weekend on AMI Audio. Some amazing content this weekend. Folks, hang in. We'll deliver that to you a little later on. We've got lots for you still on the program. Kelly McDonald with Ramya Muthan.
Well, let's get into the chatty bookshelf. This is our weekly book talk with Ryan Huey.
Who knew an entire library could fit inside your pocket? I'm Ryan Huey. This is the chatty bookshelf where we talk audiobook trends, news, and author interviews.
Ryan, we got a couple of things we want to get to today. You want to start with The Investigators? This is a cool shout out.
Thanks so much, guys, for having me back. Yeah, our friends over at Macmillan, this is a great little thing. So the graphic novel series, The Investigators, is being made into audiobooks. They're being a little bit creative here because there's many things here. It's an entire series, so there's tons of them. Last I saw, there was 26 volumes, but I could be wrong on that now because there could be more released. But they're doing sound effects. They're complete with a full cast, and they're actually doing alt text and descriptions of how many panels are on the page, that sort of thing. So it's actually really cool, really accessible, and you know they're going to be made available everywhere. They had a little short video of the cast that are voicing the characters kind of speak out, and they said it was the most fun they've had voicing anything and performing, so I think it's going to be really good.
Okay, yeah, well, Macmillan Audio... and just graphic novels in general, I guess, are becoming very, very huge, right? So this is a pretty good recommendation.
Yeah, and I think what's going to happen is, you know, this isn't new, but it's still kind of working the kinks out. And I think what's going to happen is this one will kind of put it over the top because it's learned from the mistakes others have made in the past or the exclusions that others have made in the past. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it'll be perfect. I can't tell you yes or no, but I think that it's going to be really good in comparison just because of the amount of energy that they're putting into it and how excited the cast is. That's a huge kind of thing. If you love to do what you do, you're going to sink your heart and soul into it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. I mean, I'm anxious to see about some of the extra things like the alt text and all that, but really how that grabs on. But I just love the different things people are doing and do it now and get people so involved. And when you use casts, it's so cool because we sit here and say, hey, dramas are awesome. Radio dramas are awesome. What a way to blend everything together. What people expect from TV, what people who may not necessarily know a lot about audio dramas, but now what people have gleaned from listening to audiobooks and getting one or two or three readers, now you're getting your full cast. So some tremendous stuff.
And I love that it's going to be like a play, right? Where it's not going to be...
Yes.
This is voiced by one person. It's going to be a back and forth. Kelly's line, Ryan's line, Kelly's line, Ryan's line, Ramya's line. And then when they throw in a different character. So I think that's going to be really cool.
I think so. Well, and as we hear always the graphic novel, we love when something's been done that way. And I think when you're finding these different ways and nuances, it's just beautiful. Sir, what story did you find for us this week you want to share?
This one crept up on me. It's Right in my wheelhouse. So the description is gonna, you guys are gonna laugh because it's really just something that I would soak up, but I can't believe I missed it. It's come out a little while ago. However, it's getting a lot of different opinions, good and bad, but I saw most are good. It's really interesting, the ratings, and I went through after I finished it. And it's about a 50-50 between, and again, the rage ratings, it's about a 50-50 from 5-star to 1-star on a couple of things, including Goodreads, which is interesting. So I was kind of curious, and I really wanted to bring it forward because I think others will enjoy it too.
Okay, so tell us what it is and why it's good.
So it's called The Will of the Many by James Islington. And it's narrated by Ewing Morton, excuse me, and it clocks in at 28 hours, which is unusual
Oh
for me.
my.
So it's a long
Yeah.
listen. However, the good thing about this is that it's only getting started. This is the first book in a series. So you can only imagine if the first book is 28 hours, what do we got in store for? Let's say it's a trilogy. We don't know. Then at least in the next two books, I would say probably similar. I don't think you're going to go from a 28 hour to a 6-hour book. So I think you can kind of expect kind of the same thing. You're in for a lot of thrills, and it's a pretty interesting kind of take on some things.
Wow. Okay. Like you said, 28 hours. This is an Orion kind of book. So, what caught your ear? Why?
So it's got a little bit of political intrigue. It's got a lot of conspiracy, which I like. It's got some amazing universe and world building, and that's what really takes up a lot of the 28 hours, which I thought would be boring. However, the performance is fantastic, and I do this all the time when I get a book that kind of creeps up and I'm like, oh, it's gonna be top 10 for sure. I say make it into a movie. However, with this one, I think I'm gonna have to say Hollywood, stay away. You're out of your mind if you think you can fit 28 hours, and we'll even put it into a long movie and say 3 hours, like The Lord of the Rings. You're not going to do it. They're going to have to cut out so much. So I think my opinion would be leave it alone. Give this one to the audiobook listeners, the book listeners, and like let us keep this because I'll go see it, or I'll watch it on Netflix or however it comes out, and then it'll leave that sour taste in your mouth because
You'll
it's,
butcher it. Well,
yeah,
and what you just said about the universe building, I don't know, other than just show, which for us becomes lame description that's too hard to catch up with what they're trying to show to get us to understand what this universe is like. If so much of the book in your mind is built that way, what a better place to keep it is in your imagination.
And I think that's the great part of it, right? Like obviously folks with vision can see the cover, and I think that lends a lot to it because it's been getting some really great comments about how awesome the cover is. But for someone like myself, it's like I'm getting the descriptions, but I'm also putting my own spin on it, and I really enjoy that part of it. And it's interesting because the performance, another thing is, as you guys know, I don't do well. I can't really get into the English accents. And this guy has an English accent, and I don't know if that was maybe the thing I couldn't put my finger on it, but he's, with his stops, his starts, the pacing, the world building, the narration, as opposed to voicing characters, it's really good. It's really, really good. And there's a ton of 5-star ratings just based on this, just with the, because on Audible, you do, what is it, story, performance, and I think it's overall or something like that is the
Okay.
third one. And the voicing ones and the performance were literally all 5 stars. Which
Nice.
is amazing. Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about your impressions of the main character or something?
Of course. So he's obviously a hero that is very flawed. And what the story kind of goes around is he lies to get into the most prestigious academy in this universe. And he starts to learn that things aren't what it seems in there. However, he's been sent there, as you learn a little bit later on, to get the secrets, and he finds out some things that could destroy this world. And he kind of goes from, I'll say, an anti-hero or the hated, flawed hero to what I would assume in the next books, he becomes the superhero, right? But they got to do it carefully because I do like him as that kind of
Anti-hero.
bumbly, mistaken, flawed hero. And I
Can't be
think
like
that's
that forever, though.
right.
No.
Exactly. It's almost like the coming of age or something where he's going to become something, but it's really good. The
How much humor is
conspiracy
there
is.
then? With that kind of take on it, is it the just the total dry or dark humor? What, like, how much would you say
there's
is in there?
There's a few things sprinkled in there, but you have to really pay attention to the world building, because they'll say something about food, and it'll be like, oh yeah, you know, Kelly doesn't like French fries. Like, you know, if you said that to an alien, they'd be like, what are French fries? So it's like, you got to really pay attention to the kind of nuances of the world, and you'll get some of the humor. But then there's some things where it's limited, but it's there, and I think it's pinpointed at the exact right time. And that's just my opinion. Maybe people are like, I hate it, get it out of there, because I know a lot of people do not appreciate that when it's supposed to be like world building and the conspiracy thing and the political intrigue, and it's just a whole bunch of that. But they do sprinkle in from time to time a little bit. Not 28 hours worth. I think it's like, if I had to put a number on it, maybe once every like 6 hours or 7 hours. Like, if there's just that one little line here or there.
Okay, but it's not meant to be comedy.
No, definitely not.
Even though he's a bumbler and kind of and gets in there as a charlatan.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I just say that because I think I'm used to the Hollywood movies where it's like your hero is just does everything right. He's in the right place at the right
boring.
Time. It's like, okay.
I like the jerk as a hero, man.
Well, this is not his first book, and some of the other books that he's written before this, I think starting 2014 is when he published his first book. All of the titles sound interesting, and I'm curious about, you know, the overlap of the type of stuff he writes. But does this book remind you of anything else you've read in the fantasy realm?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I hadn't considered that.
When you mentioned political intrigue, it reminded me of the 1984, but clearly this is not that vibe at all.
I'm not into the fantasy in terms of like this, or where it's, you know, the RPG, the role-playing stuff or anything like that. But I'm really, this one got me and didn't let me go. I don't know that I could compare it to anything. You know what, maybe next.
Well, take place in, Ryan? Like, is it futuristic? Or is it current?
I don't want to ruin anybody's
spoiler. Okay.
Both, right?
Okay,
yeah, it could kind of be a little bit of both. No, I don't want. It's not a spoiler. It's just you get to make that. I mean, I don't want to say you get to make that choice.
It's
like it's kind of an interpretation piece there, or at least I found it to be.
I kind of like that. Sometimes it's almost like I think a writer doesn't want you pinned down to one time, but they want to use elements from any time they choose,
which is fair. And in good writing,
in really good writing and put into it perfectly, it works.
Okay, so we can check out that one. Yep.
Yeah.
It's got a lot going on for it, for sure.
Yeah. What else you got for us, sir? Anything else before we wrap?
Of course. So as if it needed to be on sale again, but audible.com and audible.ca have every single Harry Potter book on sale, are on sale from now until the end of May. So, I mean, if you're like me and you're one of the people that don't have them, now's the time to do it. And they did a really good promo spot, and they had Stephen Fry on there, and he said what it was like to voice these characters, and then what it was like to bring the world alive, and all that enchantment and the world building, as we just talked about in the other book. But he had a really good video, and I thought it was a really good interview.
So it's the Stephen Fry versions that are on sale?
I didn't look. I only looked into the video.
I would assume if he's the one promoing. Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah.
Right, well, maybe they'll do a parallel one with Jim Dale promoing and his.
And maybe
they'll
do that next year, though. Once people have bought these, they'll
next
go
year,
in that.
No. And oh, half a year from
are
now.
Are you going to be supportive and buy it again?
Technically, I could, because I don't own any of the Stephen Fry versions, but no, thank you, Jim Dale.
I could tell by your voice that you didn't. Mm-mm. Yeah.
All right, Ryan.
I tried. Harry Potter. I tried.
He did. Yeah. I'll get like the UK, the Philosopher's Stone version, if there's a Jim Dale one, because I have the Sorcerer's Stone, right? The American version of it. I love how you guys have no comment on that. All right, thank you.
Oh, no, I even know what you're talking about. I've heard this nonsense.
Unreal. Kelly's mom would be proud.
Oh, my mother would go crazy. My mother would say, well, it took you this long to get it? What kind of trainer are you?
My just leaving me hanging like this. Oh, reminds me of the Quidditch quiz on the Neutral Zone. Okay, bye, Ryan.
thanks so much, guys. Shout out to my Capitals. Take care of those Rangers.
What's wrong with this, man? Never mind. Good grief. You guys are talking about stuff that's redundant and old. Anyway.
Okay, not even. We never trash Stephen Fry enough on this show for his performance on Harry Potter. But anyways, Ryan Hui will be back. He'll be back next Friday for more audiobook chat.
We're going to step aside, and on the other side of the break, folks, we're going to recap and weigh in on a few highlights from the past week, including problems with Ontario Safe's Street Act, breakout moments for disabled comedians, and spotting the signs of burnout. Conversations we've had on this show this week. We'll be back with Cut for Time after this.
It's fun, insightful, and inclusive. Kelly and Ramya return in a minute.
Almost open, folks, the gateway to your weekend. This is Kelly and Ramya. Welcome back to the program, wherever you are checking us out around the world. Appreciate you being with us, listening in on TuneIn Radio or OO Tunes, whatever it might be, or checking out the podcast. Subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. We'd appreciate you doing so and joining us whenever you can, in whatever way you can. We call this segment Cut for Time, ladies and gentlemen. Every Friday, we like to weigh in, recap some of the segments that we've had over the past week on the program. And we invite you to settle back and maybe take note of them, because if you missed them, go check them out. We call this Cut for Time. And we're joined today, Ramya and I, by Grant Hardy, reporter on the program, reporter producer for us out in Vancouver. Guys, I'm going to start things off. Feels like a pattern lately. I seem to be doing this. I think I'm picking the wrong day, but always the first day we get doing this. On Tuesday, health and wellness coach Francis Wong explained the types of burnout and how to spot the signs early. Take a listen.
In this case, life factors can also contribute to burnout. And these things include such things as unmanageable workloads, pressures of deadlines, and that could be something like rushing around to take someone to medical appointment after medical appointment, maybe too much work and not enough time to decompress, and spending so much time taking care of other people's needs that we don't have enough time to get our own stuff done. We definitely need timeouts, so taking a day off here or there for a breather is something that we can strive for. And sometimes this isn't possible, especially if there's a lack of support. Say you're the only child and you have siblings, but they're far away, so the responsibility of taking care of elderly parents falls on you. And I'll also add that it could be your own personality traits that are a hindrance and contributing factor. So if you're someone who is a perfectionist and always needing to be in control, that could potentially lead to burnout. So what you said, Kelly, like everyone's limitations are slightly different.
I love that we covered off so much of this stuff, because there is so many interpretations of the things we put on ourselves and may give us extra pressure. But you're who you are, and you're not going to change. It's the managing to learn how to cope and deal with the way that you are and the things that do pressure you, and learning, you know. And I remember this particularly when I started doing TV work, especially when we were working on Blindsided. I'd always be asked, hey, where are you next week? What do you wear? I don't know. You don't know. And a lot of time it became too overwhelming. It became too much to, oh, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be doing this. I have to be ready with that. I have to make sure I have that for that episode together. I have to learn that. It became to where there's just no way I could keep track. And I started to learn to take it bit by bit. Prepare. Don't look at that whole roadway. Don't look at the map and say, wow, oh, geez, here we've got mountains over here. This is a narrow trail. I'll slip off the side and land in the water and die. Whatever. Don't do that. Because it becomes too much. I had to learn that about myself, because otherwise you set yourself up. But Francis touched on so many things here that made me really think about the control that I had to learn that I had. I never wanted to commit to things. It was too much pressure for me, too much stress in my head, and brought anxiety on. I didn't want to be on boards of stuff. And I had to learn it was okay to say, yeah, I think I need a little more time to do that. I'm struggling along with that. And just be straight up and honest. Instead of saying, well, you have to achieve this or you're done. Done with what? Well, what if I just can't? What kind of person does that make me? A person who just at that time couldn't get something done. And there's so much that time teaches us. And I really have to embrace that kind of thing. And I really thought this was an important topic, because yes, obviously some of us have stressed that we cannot control. We can't do anything about whether it's looking after the people in our world, work, some stressful job, because you're dealing with life and death. There are certainly other things that happen. And sometimes we can't say, well, that's your limit. You should be able to handle that. That shouldn't be a problem. I've decided that for you. Nobody can do that. It is a lot, in my opinion, and for me, and I really felt that in this conversation with Frances as she touched on the different areas, you know, those areas where I've had to stop and say, ah, I remember that. remember when I was a wreck with that kind of thing. And it gets so hard, Ramya, to sometimes contextualize that self for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point in time, and I still think it's pretty relevant now, that hustle culture just felt like a fad, right? We were always hustling, and the side gig economy was a big deal. And, you know, everybody was so proud of how busy they were and how busy they mm-hmm. looked like they were. And, you know, nobody really talked about the mental health aspects of the 9 to 5, let alone all the extra stuff you were doing. But yep. in this clip alone, we heard about all the nuances of, you know, being a caregiver, you know, just the changing stages in life and having to adjust to that, where you might have a new baby or, you know, your partner has taken on a new job. Like, there are all these shifting and adjusting things, moving, fluid things in life that come up and change how our day-to-day routines, our day-to-day consistencies, and our day-to-day commitment levels for work changes. So it's really wonderful that nowadays we're having more of these conversations, and not just anecdotally, but also, you know, on a bigger picture, bigger scale with employers and having more flexibility arrangements just kind of looped into our work hours and work conversations and regimes. But it's still, underneath all that, there's, I think, a lot of fear for people, for individuals, thinking like, I can't get something done, or I'm afraid to bring this up at work, or, you know, this is not what they want from me, so I don't feel good voicing it. It's just like how, you know, there's the expectation when you're in college or university to take a full-time course load, to be a full-time student. Mm-hmm. So when you can't do that, or when you need extra accommodations, or if you're a person with a disability, you have to have upfront conversations about, no, I can't manage this, right? Or I won't be able to do what is the expected norm. And that still feels like very niche, Grant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much to talk about here, but just to give a couple quick points. On the one hand, it's great that we're talking a little bit about more about mental health and anxiety and burnout than we used to. And, you know, one thing I've been learning about, for example, lately is the concept of emotional labor. So, you know, people will talk about like, well, I'm the guy, you know, that like, pay the most money, you know, towards the house or whatever. So I'm like doing, you know, the most support. But, you know, in reality, the person who might be working the hardest is, you know, the person doing the emotional labor. So it could be anything like being the person who's kind of on call to, you know, talk someone out of the deep end, or, you know, provide some basic or advanced care to a loved one, or even to kind of figure out all the logistics of the house, you know, everything from kind of like, how are we going to make it through all of our, you know, appointments today? Who is going to pick up the kids and when, you know, even stuff like, you know, grandma doesn't, you know, get along too well with this person, but she gets along better with this person. So I've got to come up with, you know, the seating plan for dinner later today. Like, just all this stuff that seems really minor, but actually is very, very yeah. emotionally demanding. On the other side, though, we are constantly telling people, you know, the younger generations are just lazy. They don't have to do the hard work that we used to have to do, whatever. When in reality, there is so much stress and pressure on those people, everything from the gig economy to sort of like, what's the world going to be like in 20 years? Am I ever going to be able to, you know, own a home, and this or that? So yeah, there's a lot of pressure out there. And I think continuing to talk about burnout and mental health is going to be really important. A little bit of a tough conversation as well on Monday that we had with civil rights advocate Danielle McLaughlin, who talked about the supposed purpose and problems with the Safe Streets Act. Here she is talking about why laws like this are unnecessary.
One of the things lawmakers rarely do, to my great shock, is say, well, what's already against the law? Well, somebody's car, that's long been against the law. Blocking traffic, also against the law. And robbing somebody, You know, that it's not a big surprise to find out that assaulting or robbing people has never been lawful.
Legal.
So did, yeah, it wasn't lawful. It wasn't legal to do any of those things. But in, you know, in the effort of creating this act, you know, they said, well, you know, let's reach out and pull in as many different things that we don't like as we can.
Yeah, I mean, I always find the rhetoric of these kinds of laws really fascinating. First of all, just the names for something that is very negative. I mean, this law was intended to restrict people in need from asking for money, and society was actually spending money to ticket them, and rather than, you know, heaven forbid, provide help for people who need help. But I always find it interesting, like, number one, that negative or punitive laws often have very positive names, like the safe streets law, the freedom whatever law, the happy law. That's quite, I just find that really interesting too. But also just all the rhetoric surrounding laws, like, you know, if you don't support this law, you know, you must support violence, or, you know, you're obviously supporting, you know, whatever, theft. When in reality, that's not true at all. We've seen this with different privacy laws that were tried to be put in place, you know, on the internet too. You know, if you don't agree to this law, you obviously support whatever sort of violence or exploitation that's supposedly covered in the law. But then as we look at other laws and regulations that are already out there, a lot of those things are already kind of outlawed. So one thing I would like to see is maybe a little bit less politics, a little less rhetoric, and just making sure that we're not making laws, Kelly, for stuff that we already have, mm-hmm. but also just making sure that our laws are, you know, kept pretty basic, not a lot of hidden connotations, just basic and easy to read and understand.
And, you know, you stop and think, is it interpretation, so that you have the flexibility for the law, the courts, whomever you wish to accuse can do whatever they want to the individuals in question based on, well, any weird circumstance can happen that we may not have thought of, but we'll leave the law broad enough so that we can take the law and read into it what we make of it for the purpose of this particular situation that we might be confronted with that we haven't thought about yet. And we know that's how come there's so much latitude left by some laws when they're implemented. But as Danielle and you both pointed out here, Grant, we are talking about laws that exist on the books. It's pretty straightforward. Don't damage a vehicle if someone says, no, I don't need my window done, and you're a squeegee kid going, oh, yeah, you do, blink. So I do caution, because we see this in so many different cases, Ramya, a broadening of a law or a making of a law that leaves so much open to interpretation for convenience.
Oh, with the disability courts. Community, and when we have any kind of advocacy, we often, like always, I would say, bring up teeth and whether legislation has any, whether we know what the teeth are, if there are any. You know, like, there's just so much to keep track of. When it comes to trusting that a system works and trusting that the people who are running the systems or pushing through different things at any given level are understanding why this is a law, because we've talked about that with Danielle as well, right? Why this is a law and not just a general understanding of something, right? Like, hey, it makes sense. It's common sense not to do a certain thing. Why does it have to be law? And I think obviously a big component of that is because we want it to be to come with consequences. So yeah, whenever there's something like a full of gray area, you're just kind of left questioning what was the purpose of this anyway. Let's move to Wednesday's show for the last point on Cut for Time. AMI communications specialist Greg David told us about the second annual taping of the All Access Comedy Special at the upcoming Halifax Comedy Festival. And here he is talking about what it means to have a gig like this for up-and-coming disabled comedians.
something where we're surprised that it hadn't been done before. And the production company that we worked with and have worked with this time around, Pilot Light Productions, they were amazed that nothing like this had ever been done before. You know, they work with the Halifax Comedy Fest every year. So it's been a real thrill for them. I don't think I'm putting words into their mouths. They just have loved this. And you know, making it, putting it together, packaging it, and putting it together for AMI and for our audience, it's just a win-win for everybody. And it's introducing you to new comedians. Like, you know, people may know DJ Demers because he's so well known, you know, not only within the AMI world, but also, you know, kind of nationally and internationally down in the States, but you might not know necessarily some of the other comedians on the docket. So it's all about, you know, discovering those new comedians as well.
You know, it really is just a shout out that there are so many talented individuals out there, so many people who've been working hard under the radar for so long to get their personas out there, to get their work out there. And, you know, it's amazing that now we can keep in touch kind of individually on an indie level with people, of whether it be on social media or supporting through Patreon or something like that, and just, you know, keep tabs at some level with work and bring followings to the table and keep in touch with people on, you know, levels, even if it's not just gigantic international stage worthy. But at the same time, you have stuff like this that happens, right? Big collaborations, big features. And when you get people with disabilities on there, it's just a huge reason to celebrate, guys, because then we can get the talent more talked about and give kind of a leg up for people, Kel.
It's interesting because a lot of time we think, hey, I've got to fend for myself. I got to get my name out there. I've got to do this and that. But when we have vehicles like this where we can all show strength, and there's always safety in numbers, or that power of, we're putting a show on, we're a bunch of people who do the same thing. Yes, we have disabilities. Yes, we independently go for our different gigs. But you know what? It's nice to have that network to show that strength, to not to become part of commonplace, not unusual out there. To, oh, geez, disabled comics. You see a show like this? Wonderful. But also it's that hand-holding, that connection, Grant, that these folks are doing, which would push it forward as well, because they can at least, hey, I sent you an email. There's a really interesting festival you may want to check out that I appeared at that last year that's coming up in your area. Any little tips, any little hand-holding?
Absolutely fantastic to see more diversity on the screen, especially in arts and entertainment, where very talented people often don't get the chance to express themselves because of their diversity. It's fantastic to see more talent on screen.
You bet. Grant will be working a bit with me next week on the program. Rumya will be working off on some other assignments at times. So we'll be a little hit and miss. But Grant, we welcome you back Monday for headlines for sure.
Fantastic. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, guys.
Grant Hardy joining us. We do this segment every week at this time, cut for time. Check out our podcast if you want to go back, review some of these segments. You can do that by subscribing to Kelly and Rumya using your favorite podcast platform. We'll be back in a couple of moments. And when we return, we'll wrap up the program, tell you a little bit about some really fantastic programming coming up this weekend over on AMI Audio. Lots for you there. And I want to talk about Rainbow and some colors of pups. Hey, this one you'll like. All you animal lovers, stay tuned. We'll be back and tell you a little bit about our show for Monday after this.
We'll be back with more of Kelly and Rumya after this short break.
And I did mention the podcast, folks. If you want to check us out, Kelly and Rumya, use your favorite podcast platform. Check the show in its full version. Hey, you can catch the audio vanity card on the end of that. Rumya supplies us with that today. And we try to put them on as often as we can on the full show. You can also listen to some of those segments as we've mentioned, and they're parceled out, available to you individually. So any way you can consume the program, we appreciate it. Also, if you have some time, maybe give us a rating and review. AMI Audio this weekend, as we wrap up things here on our program, there's lots of great programming to check out this weekend. Join AMI Audio this weekend for the Guide Dogs with Purpose Gala by Scotiabank. a formal evening of fundraising in support of guide dogs being trained in Saskatchewan, hosted by our own Andy Frank, who was on our Voices segment this week. Go back and check that out. Listen live to the Guide Dogs with Purpose Gala by Scotiabank on Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's on AMI Audio.
Also, on Sunday, you can listen live as AMI Audio presents the Canadian Blind Sports Association's National Junior Goalball Championships. And veteran broadcaster Nico Cardarelli is going to be welcoming guests and delivering the play-by-play of the championships from the Bob Niven Center in Calgary, Alberta. So you can listen to the Canadian Blind Sports Association National Junior Goalball Championships live on Sunday. That starts at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio.
For our closing moment today, Rainbow the dog gives birth to 7 pups at a North Carolina shelter. Now, her 7 adorable puppies have colorful names. You'd have to guess that with the name Rainbow, right? The babies, Burgundy, Ummer, Chartreuse, Gold, Turquoise, Indigo, and Violet will go up for adoption around June. Now, these pups who are in the all-girl litter are thriving. A North Carolina animal organization wrote over on Facebook in an email to Clatchy News, "We've seen a lot of puppy litters over the years, but I can't remember seeing one this large that was all female," Samantha Ramlett, an SPA spokesperson, said. "Those are quite long odds. The dogs arrived at a shelter and had to be moved to a shelter that volunteers actually run and supply and give the help teaching that puppy how to care for their puppy. Really wonderful what they do. This is a volunteer foster home, basically, environment that specializes in this. The puppies won't go up for adoption until they can live around. Rainbow, also a sweet, attentive mom, believed to be about 1 year old, will also have to go up for adoption, too, shortly after." What a story, Rum. I really thought that's kind of cool. And look, she passed with flying colors.
Aw, well, Burgundy's my favorite name out of them.
Chartreuse.
Chartreuse?
I like that.
That was my second.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
Indigo is so nice for a dog as well.
Yeah, but it just reminds me of books and everything. So I just kind of like, I don't know anymore. It's been ruined that way. Wow.
Yeah.
Folks, on our Monday show, when we return at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Know Your Rights, Danielle McLaughlin and her guest, Senator Kim Pate, reflect on the funding announced Tuesday for the Canada Disability Benefit.
We meet Paula Coggins, a member of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing community. She's part of the Newfoundland Deaf Choir, and she's going to tell us how choral arrangements are interpreted and evolved through artistic expression through American Sign Language. It's very cool.
I have a feeling we're going to have so many questions during that segment. Hopefully you will too, ladies and gentlemen, when you join us Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll talk to you then. We're waving at you now. Get out of here, will you?
Donald and Ramya Amuthan.
Reporter Grant Hardy.
Reporter Beth Deer.
Senior producer Matt Agnew.
Visual producers Megan McGraw and Jeff Ryman.
Producer Marianne Dion Jones.
Graphics Andrew Antonello.
Production assistant Kingsley Juco.
Control room operators Daniel Penamondo, Eliza Rocco, Parker Oxtoby, Caitlin Robinson, James Kennedy.
Operations assistant Jordan Mulgrove. Director Irene Solomon.
Manager of Live Production, Paula Dineen.
Manager of Operations, Kyle Harper.
Manager of AMI Audio, Andy Frank.
Director of TV Production, Kara Nye.
Vice President, Content Development and Production, John Melville.
President and CEO, David Arrington.
Give us your feedback, 1-866-509-4545.
Copyright 2021, Accessible Media, Inc.
I'm going to have to bring up the conversations around hoodies again. I know nobody wants to take part in the debate. Lies, you all want to take part in the debate. But here's the thing. I learned recently that the word crew neck is the style of the neck. Now, I might still be wrong about this, but I'm just saying, anecdotally, I was under the impression that crew neck was a non-zip-up hoodie. So you got hoodies with the zips, you got hoodies without the zips, and then some other fancy stuff that I've never been involved in. But essentially, my understanding was if it was not a zip-up hoodie, then it was a crew neck. But recently, I have been taught that crew neck was just the type of neck of the hoodie, and it has nothing to do with whether it's a zip up or not. Now, this just adds a lot of confusion to what we already know is a very confusing debate, at least among the KR team. And it didn't make matters any more clear for me. So, I mean, I guess do with this information what you will, because I have no idea what to do with it. I'm still very confused about the different styles of hoodies that are out there. Let's just have more informed conversations about these things.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.